Hello, I'm Richard Suchet, and this is the LBC Daily Debrief, the podcast that brings you the full story on the day's biggest news. And we begin again with you-know-what. Weather chaos continues as Storm Emma sweeps in from the Atlantic on the tail of the Beast from the East. We'll speak to the legendary weatherman John Ketley. And just under 50% of young women have self-harmed, according to a survey. That's a truly shocking statistic, isn't it? Why is the problem getting worse? We'll attempt to answer that. Plus, old £10 notes are out, but new 10p coins are in. Don't worry, we'll still have the plasticky £10 notes. We'll speak to the director of the Royal Mint Museum about the new design. In fact, the 26 new designs. Now, the fact that the UK has been blanketed, nay, blasted, with snow is unlikely to be news to you. Whether you're part of Storm Emma or the Beast from the East, snow is snow, I guess. But it really has brought many of Britain's roads and train networks to a halt, with hundreds of schools closing. And the National Grid has warned that there may not be enough gas to meet demand on Thursday. Don't worry, you'll still be able to boil your eggs in the morning. The risk is to industrial users. Obviously, increased demand from households is a contributory factor, but domestic users are almost always the last to be affected. All this happening on the first day of meteorological spring. Typical, isn't it? But what can we expect over the next couple of days, and just how treacherous are conditions getting across the nation? Well, we're joined now by legendary weatherman John Ketley. John, great to have you back on the podcast again.
Thanks, Richard.
Tell me, is it going to be a bright and balmy weekend?
Absolutely, yes. You read my script. It's marvellous. It's going to be up to 20 degrees Celsius. We'll all be whipping off our shirts and heading for the beach.
You don't want to see that.
Sadly, that's my virtual forecast and not the realistic one, because at the moment we've reached equilibrium in the sense that everywhere now we're seeing temperatures at or below freezing. Yesterday was perishing cold, as we all know, and today is just the same. The only difference is from yesterday is that the wind's got stronger. It's gusting to 50 miles an hour plus in many parts of the UK, and that's just adding to this wind chill, which is meaningless in itself, but everybody knows on a bitterly cold day when the winds are blowing stronger, you're going to feel colder. So that's what it all means. As far as the snowfall's concerned, well, that's getting worse as well. I've just been looking at the figures. The latest snow depths across the country at 12 o'clock today, as much as 55 centimetres of lying snow at Drumalbin in Scotland, Spade Adam in Cumbria, and even in the suburbs of Glasgow, there's 38 centimetres of lying snow. Now, it isn't just Scotland that's had this heavy snow in the past 24 hours either. It's really Lincolnshire's been bearing the brunt of it all. And Wittering, down the A1 near Stamford, they've got 31 centimetres of lying snow, which is just a foot. Which is plenty to go over your boots, really.
Yeah, it's a lot, isn't it? And in terms of the coming days, are we going to have snow across the UK again, more snow, or is it going to be confined to certain regions?
Well, as we've heard, there is this strong Siberian easterly wind which has been blowing now for the past two or three days. That's now meeting the milder, you want to call it milder, less cold wind coming up from the Bay of Biscay. It's inherited really by the Portuguese Met Service, who've named this thing. And what it means is there's going to be a clash of personalities. There's going to be the cold air meeting the slightly less cold air coming up from the south. There's already plenty of rain in it. It's already snowing now across the West Country, and that snow is set to get heavier, really, and bring greater depths of snow to many parts of the West Country, up into the Southwest Midlands and into much of Wales, I would think, by the end of today and through tonight. So it is going to get worse before it gets better, even further north, though we're not seeing that particular storm system affecting other parts of the UK necessarily. There'll still be these snow showers feeding in from the North Sea, which aren't going anywhere quickly.
And what about the South East and East Anglia?
Yeah, well, they're in that same zone, really. They're going to keep on keeping this very cold wind. Temperatures won't be above freezing today, maybe just creeping up slightly tomorrow if we're very lucky. But the remnants of these bands of snow coming up from the southwest will affect other eastern parts of England, going up to the north of England during Friday. Not as intense, but having said that, of course, there's been plenty of snow already, and it'll just be a question of a few more hours of snow adding up to what's already lying. So parts of East Anglia and the South East will see a further 3, 4, 5 centimetres of snow, I'm sure, in the next 12 to 18 hours.
It's the first day of spring today.
Who said that?
Hard to believe, isn't it?
It is.
Certainly no blossom on the trees where I live. Is this sort of weather very unusual for this time of year? Would you expect it to be significantly warmer?
You'd expect temperatures, in the real world, you'd expect temperatures each month to go by to rise, but it's not been the case, really. It's just this past week that's turned much, much colder. A week ago, we were looking at temperatures still up around 8 or 9 degrees, and it's just been plunging every day. So it is not unusual. It's not anything that you wouldn't expect to get sometimes in March. And it is a truism to say you're more likely to get snow on Easter Day than you are on Christmas Day. That's a fact. It's a fact of nature. It's because the sea temperatures off the North Sea in particular are cooling down throughout the winter into the early spring, and they still haven't reached their lowest temperature. So when you get the colder air or the colder waters all around our shores, there's more chance then of staying colder for a little bit longer.
That's very interesting indeed. And in terms of a longer-term forecast, can we look ahead, I don't know, 10 days to a couple of weeks? Is it possible to do that and give us a sense of where we're going?
In detail, no, but in general terms, I think we can be looking at some less cold weather, much milder weather, perhaps in a sense, because we'll lose this biting wind, which really is cutting through everybody now. And we won't have that because we'll have the wind coming in from the south and then from the northwest again. So instead of seeing temperatures below freezing, as they are at the moment, they are going to get up over the weekend, in particular Sunday into Monday. You know, we will all have to wait until Sunday, Monday before we see temperatures up around 5 or 6 degrees, generally. And then next week, staying around that sort of figure. But the following week, it is just possible that we'll start to see a few places getting up into double figures, that's to say 10 or 11 degrees C. But that's in detail. I couldn't tell you which days those are going to be. But there is going to be a big sea change as we go through the next 10 days.
Being a weatherman in the UK has got to be the safest job, hasn't it?
Well, I don't know about safe. It's certainly interesting. And it changes day by day. And I wouldn't swap it for anything else, Richard, especially when I can talk to people like you.
Oh, that's very good.
I was so interested as well in the weather. I can tell it's in your eyes. It's in your voice.
Who isn't? Who isn't? John, really great to speak to you. Thanks so much. And
pleasure.
I hope you'll come back again next time we have what they call a weather event, which will probably be next week. That's John Ketley, the legendary weatherman, joining us here on the LBC Daily Debrief. Now, coming up, if you've got a couple of old £10 notes knocking about, today is your last chance to spend them. From midnight tonight, they'll cease to be legal tender. But as one door closes, another opens. Today also marks the release of the new 10p coins, and some of the designs may surprise you. We'll hear more from the man behind the designs in just a moment. But first, today is Self-Harm Awareness Day, and some shocking poll results have prompted renewed alarm over teenage mental health. Just under 50% of young women and just over one quarter of young men have self-harmed, according to the survey conducted by a number of charities. We're joined now by Dr. Bernadka Dubitska, who chairs the Child and Adolescent Faculty at the Royal College of Psychiatrists. Dr. Bernadka, I've known people who've self-harmed, and it is a deeply upsetting thing to see, and I struggle to understand why people do it. Are there common explanations for it?
Hi there, thanks for having me on. There's lots of different explanations for it. There's no one factor usually, but some of the most common things that we see when we talk to young people are conflicts, falling out with family, falling out with friends. Bullying is something that's commonly reported by young people. Educational pressures, young people are under a lot of pressure at the moment from schools, colleges. Sometimes young people are struggling with their sexuality. That can be another contributing factor. And, you know, and awful things like child abuse. And also, we mustn't forget that sometimes young people do have some very serious psychiatric problems, for example, severe depression, severe anxiety or psychosis. So all these sorts of things need to be considered and thought about.
But why does it then translate into self-harm? Why is that the result of those pressures?
Well, what young people often say to us, they experience it as a sense of relief. So the stress builds up. Often they feel there's no one to talk to. And by self-harming, there's this immediate relief they feel, which they experience as a positive sensation. But obviously afterwards, they're still left with those desperate feelings they had before. So in that sense, it can become quite a compulsive behaviour because they do get some immediate relief from that feeling. But in the long run, obviously, it's not a good way of coping with your problems.
And how do we define self-harm?
Well, it can happen all sorts of ways. Any way of hurting yourself. So, for example, we see young people who cut, who might punch, hit themselves, scratch. Other young people might take to drinking excessively or using substances. So that there's different ways in which young people can self-harm.
And for parents, obviously, witnessing their children self-harming and probably not being able to explain it or relate to it or being able to solve the problems, what would your advice be to parents who are going through that? How should they deal with that?
It's really distressing for parents and for anybody who's trying to support a young person who's self-harming. I think the first thing is to look out for the early warnings. Signal. So, for example, if a young person is keeping themselves to themselves, they seem more withdrawn, they're covering up their arms, for example, that might be a sign they're starting to hurt themselves. So just keep the feelers out. So try to understand if a young person doesn't want to talk, is more withdrawn, it might be because there's something going on for them. And just be there to listen and support that young person. Try and encourage them to talk, to share their difficulties with you. If they're able to do that, the best thing you can do is try and find more help and support for them.
That's what I was about to say. I mean, where should parents turn? Because, you know, parents will need support as well.
Absolutely. So there's lots of really good online resources. Young Minds, one of the charities who did this research, is one of those. Royal College Psychiatrists got lots of information on their website as well. But obviously sometimes young people need much more help than that, so it's important to go and approach a professional like a GP, for example, or if a young person's in school, there might be a school counsellor there, and try and get more professional support to help the young person and their families that are trying to support them. It's really encouraging at the moment. The government has got a green paper out to look at how young people can be best supported in schools and colleges. And I think this is an important area that needs addressing, and we need to be able to provide early help at the right time for young people so the problem doesn't get worse and it's spotted early on.
And in your educated opinion, are you able to give us a possible explanation as to why it seems to be more prevalent amongst women than young men?
It's really hard to tell, but often self-harm is bound up with self-esteem and poor body image. Young girls are often repeatedly exposed to body images that are unrealistic in the media these days. And we're frequently seeing young women feeling bad about themselves, bad about their bodies, and their self-esteem is really low. And sometimes they take that out on themselves by hurting themselves in that way. So that's one possible explanation.
Yeah. And with the proliferation of social media, you can kind of see why that might happen. But men presumably face the same pressures.
Yeah, I guess traditionally, you know, boys and men have tended to express their distress in different ways. So, for example, rather than talking about feeling depressed and talking about their symptoms, they're more likely to present with difficult behaviour like hitting out or using drugs and alcohol and substances. But that might be a mask for much more complicated feelings they're experiencing inside. But the survey suggests that even young boys are starting to self-harm more now.
Oh, it's worrying stuff, isn't it? Dr. Banadkar Dubitska, thanks very much for joining us here. Dr. Banadkar is the chair of the Child and Adolescent Faculty at the Royal College of Psychiatrists. Thanks very much for your time here on the LBC Daily Debrief. Now, if you've got a couple of old tenors down the back of the sofa, today is your last day to use them. The old cotton paper ones, that is. That might prove easier said than done given the weather some of you will be experiencing. But from tomorrow, you'll only be allowed to use the polymer ones, in other words, the plasticky ones. You'll still be able to swap the paper ones at the bank, though. But today also marks the day of the new 10p coin. Now, this is truly making me feel old, because the old 10p's look like the new 10p's to me, because I actually remember the old 10p's. They were pretty big. But what are the new ones like, and what was the thinking behind the new designs? Well, here to tell us about it is Director of the Royal Mint Museum, Dr. Kevin Clancy. Kevin, thanks for joining us. Why are we getting new 10p coins? I'm quite happy with the current crop.
Well, the way in which they look broadly, you know, that the size they are, the colour they are, and the weight and so on won't change. So, you know, that's not altering at all. It's the designs that we're putting on the 10 pence pieces, and we've decided to issue a series of 10p pieces based on the alphabet of Britain. So the idea of representing Britain in 26 ways, 26 subjects, that says something about Britain today, that says something about the sort of things we like, the sports we enjoy, the symbols that mean something to us. We try to make it fun. We try to say something about what Britain is today.
That's interesting. And how did you settle on that concept?
Well, it's...
What's the process for reaching that decision? Is there a bunch of you that sit around a table and just band some ideas around?
I suppose it's an evolution on one level, that when we had the Olympic Games in Britain in 2012, we issued 50 pence pieces for every sport. There were 29 sports in those games, and there was a 50p piece for each one. And that was hugely popular. People of all ages were finding them in their change and collecting the whole set. And we thought, well, you know, that engaged the public in collecting in the coinage. Let's think of another way of doing that is truly national. That can involve everyone, that isn't, you know, as far as we can make it, partisan or anything like that, and have a little bit of fun with it. And And so, you know, it evolved in that way. And, you know, how do you choose subjects? Your 26 things that are British will be different from mine. And we tried to make it, we tried to avoid individuals. We tried to avoid, you know, as far as we could, you know, it being, you know, interest groups or whatever it is. We tried to make it as national and encompassing as we could.
And why do you do it on the 10p coins? Is it because the design of the 10p's haven't changed for a while? I mean, you could have done this on, like you say, the 50p's or the 5p's.
Yeah. We'd never done it on the 10p's before. They're a convenient size, so you can get a design on there that people will see pretty easily. So that was one of the reasons. And, you know, they're reasonably well used. And I suppose the fact that it was that we were going to do something different, that this is uncharted territory in a way. Well, why not do it in a different way as well? Use a different coin.
It's interesting your view on the role that kind of coins and the designs of coins play in society as like serving as part of our identity in some way. Is that how you see it?
The origins, you know, you can track the whole history of coinage in exactly as you just said it. They represent pretty well every single coin that's ever been issued from, you know, China to South America has represented the people who've made it. So whether that's the chap in control or the woman or the man who's a ruler, to something that symbolizes that particular part of the world, whether it's a flower or animal or, you know, building, whatever it is, every single culture uses coinage in that way and uses symbols that mean something to them. And it tends to be split. If you look at it, it tends to be a head of state on one side, whether a king or prime minister or president, whatever, and something that's more decoratively symbolic of that people. And we don't think about it day in, day out. But, that, you know, as you mentioned earlier, the notes are changing. You know, they have designs that are representative of culture in a different way. They have authors and scientists and political activists. And, you know, they're saying something about the nation. We use them so frequently and unthinkingly, but, you know, naturally absorb this bit of what we are and reinforces things that mean something to us.
So do you want people to use them, or do you want people to collect them?
I think a bit of both, really. Yeah, we want people to, yeah, clearly, if they, you know, they won't get them in their change unless they're being used, so that's very important. But it's also taking a moment to look at, you know, these items that are the most ubiquitous things that we use, all of us handle every single day. And we'll take a moment. If there's a different design on it, well, that may stimulate people to think a little bit about the, you know, the country they live in.
Hmm. And do you have a favourite design?
I like the Q, the Q for queuing, which has a left queue and people queuing through the queue. There is a way in which the designs are a little cryptic sometimes. So there's a portcullis for H, and people are thinking, H for portcullis, what's that about? And it's a symbol of the House of Commons. So sometimes you need to think it through a little bit, like a crossword puzzle, but that's deliberate. That's making people go to a next level of looking at it and trying to work it out.
And finally, they are in circulation today. How do they get introduced into circulation? Where are they?
They're being introduced through the post office network. So about 2.6 million of them are being distributed through their network of shops and branches right throughout the country. So we're launching them as of this week, and people will start finding them, being given them in their change over the next few days.
Really interesting stuff. Dr. Kevin Clancy from the Royal Mint Museum, thanks very much for joining us here on the LBC Daily Debrief. And that is your LBC Daily Debrief for today. I'm Richard Suchet, and we'll be back to give you the full story on the day's biggest news tomorrow, which, the way things are going, it could well be snow again. In the meantime, make sure to hit subscribe so that you never miss your daily update. And if you've enjoyed today's programme, please do leave us a generous review. Only 5 stars will do. But of course, the news doesn't stop with this podcast. Make sure you listen to LBC on digital radio, FM in London, or online at lbc.co.uk. I'll speak to you tomorrow.